This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Coming up on today's show, a look at an effort to end modern-day slavery. But first, on September 22, 1862, President Abraham Lincoln signed the Preliminary Emancipation Proclamation. It formally notified the Confederacy of his intention to free all slaves within the rebellious states if they didn't cease fighting and rejoin the Union. On January 1, 1863, with the Confederate states still in rebellion, President Lincoln issued the final Emancipation Proclamation. 48 copies of the Emancipation Proclamation were originally produced. Of those, just 26 copies are known to exist today, and only 9 Lincoln-signed copies have sold publicly in the last 40 years. One of those copies is currently on display at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. Joining us to discuss Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation are Freedom Center President Dr. C.G. Newsom and Dr. Eric Jackson, Associate Professor of History at Northern Kentucky University. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. C.G. and Eric, thank you so much for being here this afternoon.
Really glad to be here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Eric, you know, it's interesting, the whole idea of the Preliminary Emancipation Proclamation. It's just something that I never really knew much about or thought much about. So I'm wondering why President Lincoln just didn't sign an order that immediately freed all the slaves in the rebellious states. Why a preliminary version of this?
I think the issue with Lincoln is at the beginning of the Civil War, the Civil War was not about the freeing of enslaved African Americans. So it took a while for Lincoln to kind of get transformed by the war, that the war transformed him as it transformed the country itself. So Lincoln was taking small steps to not agitate, particularly the border states like Kentucky or Delaware or Maryland, and he was making that slow march towards making the war about freedom for all people.
So initially, he wasn't looking at abolishing slavery as being the direction he was going to head.
Absolutely not. Lincoln, I talked about this in my class, that in some ways, Lincoln's echoing the dominant perspective of most Americans, that the Civil War is not about ending enslavement. It's more about the power of the federal government or the national government. And Lincoln's getting dragged and transformed into this war as the war continues, because Lincoln believed that the North would fight this quick and simple and easy war, and it'd be over in 6 to 8 months. And after a year, it's not over.
So when did Lincoln change his mind on this? What persuaded him to go abolishing slavery is the route to take? When did that happen?
Losing battles.
Losing battles. Losing battles.
I mean, Manassas is a disaster, and he's changing generals one after the other, and that simple war is turning into a complete disaster, and soldiers are deserting, and you have this African-American cadre of enslaved folks of color and free blacks who want to fight for freedom in the United States. And so Lincoln's being transformed as the war goes on, sometimes kicking and screaming.
So what's the reaction when he releases the Emancipation Proclamation, or at least says, "I'm going to do this"? How does the South react? How's the North react to this?
It's in segments. The South is terrified. I mean, if nothing else, the release of enslaved persons of color is your labor mass. It's free. And for free blacks, people like Douglass, Frederick Douglass, and those folks were part of that powerful abolition group, they had always said that African Americans, free or enslaved, should have the right to fight for freedom and equality in the United States.
Yeah, Lincoln was very concerned about holding his power base together, because not all of his cabinet members even were supportive of his thinking along this line. For various reasons, some of them being very, very practical. Our own Salmon P. Chase, for example, felt that freeing blacks without arming them would only put blacks at greater jeopardy. That was a major concern that he put before Lincoln time and again. What do you do with these people? How are they to be employed? How are they to take care of themselves? There were a lot of considerations. And, I could go on with that, but it was not an easy decision. And it took a while for him to come to a full commitment, but when he did, he was there.
CG, so he puts out this preliminary Emancipation Proclamation. How many days before he actually put out the final version of it?
Well, it was a process that took place over several months. He floated the idea with various members of his cabinet through the summer leading up to September, and got various reactions. He convened them as a group. Dr. Jackson?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think it's Lincoln's mentality when the war starts. He echoes some of the views of Jefferson Davis, who becomes the president of the Confederacy, that he argues that the Civil War is a white man's war, has nothing to do with enslavement. But Lincoln changes. And I think it changes because he's presented with a situation where the war means redefining the country to really mean those ideas that's embedded in the Declaration of Independence, that all men are created equal, endowed with certain rights. Among those are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And he actually believed that. It wasn't just rhetorical arguments. He actually believed it. And I think his humble beginnings gives him that opportunity to understand the less fortunate, the folks who are not from the right families, the right side of the tracks, the money family. Lincoln understood that in his hearts of hearts. And so the war itself enable him to navigate through that landscape and understand you have to push and pull and understand the complexities of how to galvanize your own cabinet. And I think that's really pointed out because I also use a part of the film a couple of years ago called Lincoln, where he talks about not necessarily knowing that the Constitution gives him the right to declare people free, but he was going to do it anyway. Yeah.
And as a military measure, which made the thing all the more complex for military officials who reported to him, some of them were livid at the very thought that he was going to do this.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, Eric, was the Emancipation Proclamation what we would call an executive order today?
Yes, I think so. It's okay. An executive order. I think it starts, as I talk about it in numerous venues, it starts what I call the expansion of the executive office, the power of the executive office and, quote, War Powers Act.
Now, when it finally does take effect, January 1st, 1863, does this put an immediate end to slavery?
No.
In point of fact, it only applied to certain places.
The language is quite qualified in it. No, it didn't free all the slaves. Only slaves held in bondage in those states currently in rebellion against the Union, which was another complicating factor.
Exactly. I mean, just right across the river in Kentucky, if you're an enslaved person of color in Kentucky before the emancipations issued after, you're still in that same predicament. So if you're an African American, you're trying to get across the river to Ohio because the documents has a different effect.
Now, how is this a precursor to the 13th Amendment? I mean, I guess you needed the 13th Amendment to give the Emancipation Proclamation some teeth?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. Yes. You needed the 13th Amendment to bring to light the implications in the Emancipation Proclamation.
Yes, because the Emancipation Proclamation is a proclamation. The 13th Amendment is an amendment to the Constitution that changes the landscape of the Constitution. Just by the sheer, you have to link the proclamation to the document to say this is a constitutional amendment that's going to change the landscape of America forever.
And does this set the tone for the 14th Amendment as well?
In some ways it does. I think the 14th Amendment gives African Americans back the protection of the Constitution, because there's a Supreme Court case, Dred Scott, that talks about, and its implication is it at the end is that the Constitution does not apply to African Americans who are free, because enslaved African Americans had been caught up with the 3/5 clause during the Constitutional Convention. Free blacks are a whole different matter. They function as if they were free, but with the Dred Scott decision, everything changes, and Chief Justice Roger Taney says that the Constitution does not apply to any of them.
Citizenship. all up in the air before we get the 14th Amendment, which is something we're still really working out as to what that means practically.
Absolutely. I guess the 14th Amendment was saying to the southern states, you have to treat everybody equally under the law. You can't discriminate. And it made the protections broader in nature, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's interesting that you've gotten a copy of this, CG. Yeah. I mean, how rare is it to have a copy of the Emancipation Proclamation?
This is absolutely a very special treat for the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center, for the Cincinnati metropolitan area on the whole, the entire region. Let me begin my response like this. Cincinnati has played and continues to play a very major role in the historical constellation of the United States. The Emancipation Proclamation is partly the product of a native son, Salmon P. Chase, who played a major role in critiquing it, talking it through with Lincoln. And so it is a product that I would say Cincinnati, by way of Salmon P. Chase, played a role in helping to make possible. And we have it on display, an authentic copy signed by Abraham Lincoln in his own signature, his own writing and all, in our center for public viewing. To stand there in front of the document and read it is to feel yourself in the moment of all the conversations and heated debates that took place to make that language possible. I've had people come into the center this summer and stand there with their children, read together, and cry together.
Wow.
It's just that moving, because its implications are so far spread, so rich, and so deep as relates to how we understand humanity on the whole, quite beyond the context of the Civil War and slavery in America.
So how did the Freedom Center come across this copy? How did you obtain this?
Well, it so happens that I have some good friends.
You must.
Very blessed to have some wonderful friends, and one of them is David Rubenstein.
Okay.
Who owns a copy of the Emancipation Proclamation that we have in our building. I asked him if he would lend it to us, and from the very beginning, he was open to that. There's a wonderful story about how we got it here in a climate-controlled truck, chaperone, and all that kind of thing. We could talk about more later. He also owns a copy of the 13th Amendment and even the Magna Carta. I have already broached the conversation about the 13th Amendment. I haven't gotten around to the
Magna Carta yet. So you might actually have it on display at the Freedom Center at some point.
We certainly hope to have the 13th Amendment in our building before too long.
We will continue our conversation about the Emancipation Proclamation. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us to discuss the Emancipation Proclamation are Freedom Center President Dr. C.G. Newsom and Dr. Eric Jackson, Associate Professor of History at Northern Kentucky University. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And CG, you were talking about how David Rubenstein loaned you this copy of this valuable document. What this is entrusting this document say to you about the Freedom Center?
Well, let me be very clear about this. David is celebrated for being what he calls a patriotic philanthropist. He knows philanthropy. When he makes a commitment like this, it's not just because he happens to think it's a good thing. It's because he studied the situation. The co-founder of the Carlyle Group, he has made, quite a success of himself financially. So he knows value. And for him to commit this copy of the Emancipation Proclamation to us on loan is a statement of our value and worth, our high value and worth. We are a big deal, if I may say so with some honesty.
You may.
It's not that any organization has the opportunity to put a document like this on review that he owns. Now, this is the man who has paid for the renovation of the Washington Monument, Arlington House, and Monticello, he knows what he's doing when he makes a commitment like this.
And CG, that's why I like you. Don't mince words. Describe the document that's on display. What kind of paper is this on? How big is this?
Well, it's a printed copy. I guess about 20 some inches high, maybe 11 some inches wide. I'm giving you approximate numbers because really gotten that kind of information in the control yet. But it's very, very stately presented in a very wonderful frame that David had mounted himself. So it came to us already framed, bearing both the original signatures of Abraham Lincoln and his personal secretary, because it's by way of having both signatures that we can verify its authenticity. And you get to see the nature of the ink. I find that kind of stuff very, very fascinating. I'm not able to speak to the particular type of paper right now. Would love for some experts to come and look at that. There is a spot at the very
top. It is watermarked, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Up at the top of the thing, and we're sometimes asked about that. It raises a lot of curiosity. We don't have a definitive response. But the document is presented in a very, very climate-controlled room with very special lighting. It has to be rested periodically. All of this adds to its mystique and its ambience when you come to visit it.
Yes, you say it's rested periodically?
Yes,
so it's actually,
we have to rest it because the protocol requires that we take care of it in a certain way as to ensure its longevity and its preservation. And the light has to be of a certain prescribed intensity. We meet all these requirements. It's a little chillier in this particular gallery than others, because of the regulations related to the room temperature and the like. It just really adds something to it in a very special way. We have original copies from the Harper's Weekly magazine around the room, which helps to set the stage for it, what Harper's was saying around the time that the proclamation was issued. And we have original drawings from the same time period, part of the Harper's magazine materials. It's just a special place to come and visit and be. We can do educational programming, by the way, in relationship to the discussion of this document. It has deep religious implications as well as political implications and sociological implications. There are a number of ways to talk about this, as well as the aesthetic aspects of it with respect to how it's printed and the way it looks and so forth.
Eric, you know, the people talk about the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. Is the Emancipation Proclamation as fully appreciated and fully understood as it could be?
I'm not sure. I think for me it is, because it's one of the top three documents that this country is founded on. As you mentioned, the United States Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, Constitution are the three founding documents of the United States of America. It makes it what it is today for all people. And again, I think it just enhances, the emancipation enhances the Declaration of Independence. I mean, it's just a powerful document.
Now, this is one of 48 copies. What are the stories behind what's the story behind the 48 copies? I mean, who produced them and what was their purpose?
Well, the purpose was to get the word out, for one thing, but more particularly to raise money for the war.
Fundraiser.
Absolutely.
How did that work?
Because by putting his signature on these documents, having made such a bold move, he created a lot of interest of great historical value and worth, and there were people who understood this and who were willing to pay for copies.
So it was like a war bond, a collectible,
yes,
or okay,
exactly.
How interesting. Nick emailed and he wanted to know how long the proclamation is going to be on display, and are there certain times of day that it's on?
Well,
on display?
We have it on display Tuesdays through Saturdays from 11 until 5. when we have to let it rest, we make announcements prior to that. But for the most part, Tuesdays through Saturdays, it is available for viewing through next fall. That is our hope, that we can keep it here until the fall of 2016.
And I was really bowled over too, CJ, about what you were saying earlier, how the reaction that people are having to this.
Powerful reaction. I just came out of the gallery with a group of people from Columbus, and they were trying to make their way through the center and to do so as quickly as they could. And they got into the gallery of the Emancipation Proclamations like they got stuck. They couldn't move. So it'll be August through August 2016 we'll have it.
Okay. And that's pretty consistent that people are all going, wow, oh, wow, this is
breathtaking. And now to get the 13th Amendment in with it, which is what we are working to do, we are actually full speed ahead on that.
Yeah, won't that be dynamic?
One of the few times you'll ever have an opportunity to see these two documents together in the same room, particularly in this part of the country.
Eric, when you're teaching the history of the Emancipation Proclamation, do your students just have that same kind of wow feeling about it?
Of course. Yeah. I mean, because it's American history. I mean, it's history in the making. It's the founding document that makes America different than other countries, especially for students of African descent, because it defines their role in the United States as something more than property. They become humanized in a country that for centuries had exploited them and their parents and their families. And now they're part of this American dream. And it's a great dream.
Yeah. And if I remember correctly, when Lincoln signed this, there's wording in there that he's putting the full force of the government behind this. He's dead serious about this.
Absolutely. But again, it's just a proclamation. You have to put meat into it.
You had to make it the law of the land, right?
Yes. You have to figure out how to enforce this thing. I mean, it's one thing that Lincoln prescribes the freedom of enslaved folks of color in states that had left the Union. The question becomes, now what? Because the war does certain things for African Americans and helps them get their freedom. But what does freedom really mean?
Mm.
Which is the same topic I think we're talking about today globally. What does freedom really mean across the world?
Yeah, Eric and CG, I'm interested in how both of you look at this. What makes this document so relevant today? Wow.
Because it speaks to the truth. And if the truth is the truth, it's enduring. It is, let us say, eternal. It was true at the beginning of the world, and it will be true beyond the world. So it has very relevant current application to any situation related to oppression and bondage anywhere in the world, whether it's here in Cincinnati or some place else in another corner of the world, so to speak. The proclamation is in some respects a declaration issued by one individual that speaks to the truth that we all feel within ourselves, that appeals to what I sometimes refer to as the sensus communis, the common sense of truth, the awareness of these things that are given to us as apparent. Slavery is an evil no matter when it takes place. So the Emancipation Proclamation comes onto the world scene, as it were, as a statement against slavery whenever it preceded chattel slavery, and as a statement which will contradict anybody trying to make a claim or a case for slavery after the end of chattel slavery.
And I think for me, it embodies the struggle of people of color to succeed. It's what I call part of that triumphant of understanding people of color in the United States generally and economically, politically, socially, of understanding this, the concepts of contradiction, struggle, and perseverance. Mm-hmm. You persevere, you struggle, but you understand in the end, you can persevere.
Yeah. See, and with this Underground Railroad story that helps to bring to mind the role that Cincinnati played in helping to usher in the Civil War. All of those people who escaped from the slave states and all the people who helped them escape were essentially doing what Abraham Lincoln kind of ratified through the issuance of the Emancipation Proclamation. They were making their own statements about truth and freedom and the evil of slavery.
Yeah, it's also a reminder, too, that this is an ongoing thing, isn't it?
Oh, very much so. Yeah, very much so.
C.G. and Eric, thank you so much for being here this afternoon.
Great to be with you. Thank you so much.
National Underground Railroad Freedom Center President Dr. C.G. Newsom and Dr. Eric Jackson, Associate Professor of History at Northern Kentucky University. Up next, an effort aimed at ending modern-day slavery. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.